Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today, we're going to be talking with Robert Carmichael, Jr. He is the Senior Vice President of HR, Training, IT, and Facilities, and anything else the Maine Savings Federal Credit Union wants to provide for him. Right, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, you have quite a background. We certainly want to talk to you about that as we get into the show. But today we're going to be talking a lot about employee engagement. And one of the things we're going to definitely be talking about is using frontline employees as part of that engagement as a recruitment and retention tool. So to give us a little history in terms of how you got to the Maine Savings Federal Credit Union, talk to me a little bit about your background. Talk to me a little bit about how you got into HR and provide the audience a little bit of history here, if we could.
Sure. I spent most of my life to this point in the military. I spent almost 27 years in the military from the time I was commissioned out of ROTC at the University of Maine. And many of you and many of your listeners probably recognize, that the role of a military officer in the military is you wear a variety of hats, but most importantly, leadership is one trait, one attribute that is instilled and certainly is tested throughout your career. I was a Black Hawk helicopter pilot and worked in a variety of capacities on active duty and special operations, and then came back full-time with the Army National Guard. So I was an active duty officer with a full-time status in the National Guard in Maine, and ultimately retired. My last assignment was as the commander of the Maine Army National Guard out of Augusta. And as a result of that that career and some of the things I had done in my career, I'd been an organizational development consultant in the military, had gone through school and training in organizational development, it was called. It was organizational effectiveness at one point in time, where you certainly develop a lot of skills in building organizations, team building, communication, problem solving, all those sorts of things. Did that and through a friend, and I think most people recognize the value of networking and in terms of jobs and applying for jobs and finding out about opportunities. A friend of mine that I'd known and played golf with for 25 years was the CEO of Maine Savings, and on one trip he had asked me when I was going to retire and what I was going to do, and mentioned a need for, in a growing organization, a need for somebody at the senior level in the human resources and training area. So about 12 years ago, a little over 12 years ago, I started in at Maine Savings, and that began what has been a really, really exciting and fun second career.
You know, one of the things that I know when people necessarily look at a military background, they'll be saying, so talk to us about engagement. I mean, there is sometimes a different thought process in terms of private sector and military sector. But in fact, I believe there's a lot of synergies between the two. What have you found going from the military into, the private sector, especially in the banking and credit union area?
Well, I get a lot of questions. I get it in a number of different ways. One people will say to me, you don't seem like a military person. And I don't know what exactly that means, maybe from some stereotype they have of military officers or something they've seen on TV, or even maybe somebody they've come in contact with. But I feel the same way that as you do, and what you just mentioned, that in any organization, leadership is leadership, and it's what makes organizations effective, or the lack of it is what makes them ineffective. And leadership skills in the military, the types of things you do to motivate, to recognize and reward, to seek out and search out talent, those sorts of things are similar to what you do in any business. And in the banking or credit union world, it's no different. The difference in many respects is process and the types of processes you're dealing with and using. Obviously, you're dealing with a bureaucracy and the types of governmental regulations and bureaucracies that, frankly, I don't miss. they're quite different than working in an organization where you certainly have regulatory, you know, compliance, and those sorts of things, but you're much more flexible and nimble to be able to do things in whatever functional area you are in this business, and I really enjoy that. But, you know, leadership is leadership. I do recognize that the military, I don't know the exact percentage, but as most people would recognize, it's predominantly a male organization. In the banking business, it's predominantly a female organization. It's just different in the way you sometimes manage people, but it's very, very similar in terms of the same sorts of leadership skills that are necessary.
You know, you wrote an article, and this had to do with create opportunities for growth and development to keep employees engaged. And in there, you use the line, people want to be challenged, whether they've been here for 2 years or 20 years. You know, challenge is an interesting word. and when we talk to engagement people all the time on the show, and they always talk about making sure that you find out what the employee really lights them up, right? Really gets them motivated. But sometimes that isn't always in sync with what the organization needs or what the organization strives towards at that very moment. How do you balance that challenge that you talk about in that area?
It's difficult for organizations at different sizes. Large organizations may find it more challenging than an organization of our size. We're about 98 employees right now. But what we really look for, and it's part of the engagement piece, is to try to find the best fit for employees in the job that they're doing. And we've got examples of people that maybe started out as a teller and that wasn't the right fit for them. And we maybe moved them laterally into a position in the administrative or operations area that the types of things they wanted to do. Maybe they weren't as enamored with the front-facing retail side of things, but they were really good at and stimulated by compliance work, for instance, or something that is more just a singular focus for them. And they thrived. You might not think that they were the best people in the other role, but they've thrived in the role that they've been moved into. So we're always, and it's a work in progress. Obviously, it's one of those leadership things that we have to keep working with our supervisors and managers and the training that we give them, is to identify and recognize those things that really create energy and really engage their staffs. We're certainly not big enough to make everything work and fit, you know, perfectly. But if the leader is connected to their subordinates, to the people that work for them, and communicates frequently, they can identify areas. And it might be just extra duties or extra things that, you know, you give them to stimulate them. And in one case, it might be just somebody being in charge of the wellness committee or the social committee or something like that. Or it might be more educationally driven. But it's those sorts of things that it's the connection between supervisors and employees, I think, that helps us identify ways that we can challenge and stimulate our employees.
You know, we're going to be talking a little bit today, probably in the next segment, especially about how you've really reached out to employees to get talent, right, to bring them into the recruiting process. But I still want to stay at, right at this moment at the front end, right, because you have to have a culture, you have to have great talent to start with to be able to attract and get even more great talent. Especially in the standpoint of you're building a culture, building an organization. When you joined the credit union, the Maine Savings Federal Credit Union, as I said, we're talking with Robert Carmichael. He's a senior vice president of HR, training, IT, and facilities at Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. When you joined the organization, did you look at the organization and say to yourself, okay, how are we going to elevate the talent level? And having said that, you know, what is it that I want to do to really maintain and keep it? Because that, I think, is where organizations sit today. They say, you know, how am I going to make this work here?
When I first came into the organization, I had told my boss during our interviews and our discussions, my fear was that I was going to be bored. I had been, you know, a helicopter pilot, done a lot of really just fascinating, dangerous, interesting things on a daily basis in a big part of my career, and I thought about going into banking and thinking, oh, it's going to be slow, it's going to be boring, and I haven't experienced that at all. I've been challenged all the way through with these types of things. How do we evaluate our talent? How do we recruit and retain the types of people that we need? Well, when I came in, the first thing I recognized very early, and I'll tell you, when my boss John and I talked, he said, "Hey, you know, you haven't been in this business at all. I think it would be helpful if you spent 3 weeks on the teller line." So the first thing I did as a retired military general was to spend 3 weeks learning and operating as a teller, and I can tell you that was probably the most valuable, humbling experience, because I recognized that it starts there. Those are the employees where the rubber meets the road. They're the face of the company. And so I needed to understand that, and I needed to get that right, because most of our turnover that we have, and we don't have significant turnover compared to a lot of organizations, but it's in that entry-level, front-facing job as a teller. So I did that, and then I realized that one of my charges was to improve the training. In order to improve the training, we had to get a measure of where we stood, how were we doing. And so I implemented some mystery shopping programs early on so we could get a baseline of where we were. And then from there, we started ramping up our training. The training at that time had been basically you come in, get a little bit of systems training, and then you're just you're kind of learning on the job. Well, we took that to a new level and started formulating, and we've been working on that ever since, just continually improving the training of employees when they come in. And that sort of set the culture. The other thing that we did at that point in time was we identified, as part of our brand, we wanted to be known for service. We thought that a lot of people talk about service, but not a lot of organizations do it the way it should be done and do it effectively, that other things in our business are commodities, that we could set ourselves apart with our service and creating a wow service experience. So we started working on that culture by having everybody go through a day-long training session with the CEO and myself, emphasizing that part of our culture, emphasizing service and how we wanted that to look, and we've carried that through to this day. And that sort of set the tone of changing a culture at Maine Savings that took us to a new level. At least we believe we do. It's never a, you know, it's always work in progress, and we want to keep improving, but that's where we started. And so from that point on, we had to look for the talent that fit that culture. To get back to your original question is, we're constantly evaluating what kind of people would be the best fits.
We're talking with Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior Vice President of HR for Training, IT, and Facilities at Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. and maine.dalecarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we are talking with Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior Vice President of HR, Training, IT, and Facilities for the Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. And we're talking about really employee engagement, and along with that, we're going to be talking about how you can get talent from using your employees to make that happen. You know, Rob, one of the things we've been talking about here is about, you know, finding great talent. And as you know, the market today, we're hearing out in the marketplace at CMA, we're hearing finding great talent, retaining great talent are two of the biggest challenges that right now are happening, especially here in Maine with the marketplace as it is. In the article that you wrote, it also talked about here that you might be having to prepare for, if you want really top talent, you might have to prepare for sticker shock, especially in newly created positions and those challenging the most. What do you think about that? How do you feel that the market is right now in regards to the compensation side of it? And what type of prep work can an organization really look at to make that less of a strain on their resources?
Locale is a big part of this whole process, as you might imagine. I have peers on national council I was on that live in different parts of the country that have 40% turnover right now, which just would be so hard. It's hard for me to fathom trying to fill positions like that. Our turnover is about 9%, so we're in a pretty good spot right here in the Bangor, greater Bangor area. In the Portland area, it might be more difficult. But the areas, we do have some areas that when we need to fill the positions, a little more challenging. Commercial loan officers, mortgage loan officers, those types of skill sets require experience, require people that have had a significant amount of experience in that role. It's not that you can't train people and develop people, but it takes a long time. And so other banks, credit unions are competing for those sorts of people. From our entry-level positions, we've gone through a continuum of change in that process. Right now, we look for people with service skills, and in the market right now, it's actually not too difficult to find the quality of the candidate that you're looking for the entry level teller positions. People with service skills change jobs fairly frequently, and so when I look for that type of person, I'm looking for those skills more so than the technical skills. When I first started, I would look for people with banking experience, and what I found over time was we could train the banking experience, we can train the technical system, because they're most likely changing anyway, but it's hard to train the soft skills, the communication skills, the problem-solving skills. And so when we look at the challenges of finding talent and paying for talent, at the entry-level position, things aren't too bad right now. We're being pretty competitive with that. Down the road, it may tighten up some. But it's the lending positions that become a little more difficult. And I don't know if you want me to go into our how we get some of that talent, but I can talk about our
referral
program.
I think it would be interesting to the audience to understand the process you go through, because I think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the listeners here are HR professionals, they're HR strategic thinkers, they're business owners. You know, finding talent can be a challenge no matter where you are. And even though you find talent, as you said, it's got to be the one that fits your organization. So any process or any tips you can provide certainly allows the audience to understand how your methodology works.
Sure. And I mentioned networking. This is the way that I found my job here at Maine Savings, through friends and network. And that is what we're using for the most part here for candidates. We have a referral bonus that I started a number of years ago. What we identified was that most of the time, a high percentage of the time, our employees know the type of person that will fit in well with our culture. And so we said, well, let's make a give them an incentive to seek out and find those people that might fit. And so we pay them a referral bonus when somebody comes on. And if they're still with us after 6 months, they get another part of the bonus. And that has been really, really effective, particularly in the entry-level positions. But also it's helped with some of our branch manager positions and our middle management positions. Again, we don't have a lot of turnover there, but we found that to be more effective than using some of the paper advertising, even electronic advertising, and some of the job sites. The referral, it reflects our culture, and it helps us get candidates that are more likely to fit in our culture.
You know, you're talking about candidates that fit within a culture. I think one of the things I like to do is back up for a second, if I could, and say, how did you arrive at the perfect type of person that fits at your credit union? And we're talking with Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior VP of HR for Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. How did you come up with that profile?
Well, see, it starts with the service focus that I mentioned. I went to a Disney Institute at one point in time, and one of the things that stuck with me is how they evaluate their candidates, and they start watching and evaluating the candidate from the time they're in the waiting room waiting for the interview to start. They look at their demeanor, they evaluate all that personality type approach. And so we wanted to initially find people, one, that have a passion for service. And that's through the interview, through their resume. But what we observe is most important. So do they have a passion for service? Do they enjoy having fun at work? We're professional in every sense of the word, but one of the criteria for our culture is that you've got to enjoy coming to work and having fun at work. And we do a lot of things as an organization to make work fun. And people sometimes think in the banking business you can't do that, but we make sure that our members know that through our processes and services, how professionally we are, but we also make sure that our employees know they can deliver those services and still enjoy coming to work. One of the things we say all the time is you spend more time at work with your coworkers and with this family than you do, in many cases, your own family. So service focus, fun are two of the things that we really look for is the primary fits, and that seemed to work pretty well for us.
No, that's great, because you're really taking the time to do the pre-work, right? That's sometimes what a lot of organizations don't do, is that pre-work in terms of making sure that they understand truly what they're looking for or setting up for prior to actually hiring or going into that. When you're competing for the best candidates, and you're trying to do your value proposition to get them to come on board, have you found that there are certain things that right now in today's market the candidates are looking for that may be out of the ordinary, maybe flex time or other things that you're hearing about that organizations can think about in terms of, you know, how they can compete best for candidates today?
Yes, I think you'd mentioned flexible workforce, talent commuting options. I think that's going to come into play more down the road for us, more and more, and we're evaluating that aspect of our culture right now. What positions could we offer those benefits to? What could help us as well in that respect? So flexible workforce, technology, telecommuting, salary and benefits always will be important. The benefits, we're continuing to look at our benefit package, healthcare being the most important one that people seem to focus on, and that's a continuing challenge. We have some of the best benefits of any of the financial institutions, and we continually are looking at ways we can make those better. But medical benefits and time off, we offer paid time off as opposed to separate, like a lot of companies do, sick and personal time. We find that paid time off is important to people, particularly the millennials now. So those things, we need to make sure we're competitive. But I think the most important thing is, once we get somebody here, is to make sure that they're challenged and they're engaged. And I go back to that, because if people are challenged and engaged, they end up being recruiters for your organization as well. And it goes back to the culture. People are our best recruiters, and so we try to keep focused on that.
There's no question that, you know, an engaged employee, somebody that's really excited, really goes out and shows that. Now, when we're talking about, you brought the person in, you got them hired, you think they're the right fit, how important is that onboarding process to making sure that they understand what is the expectation? How does that fit into the employee engagement process? I believe it's the critical first step. It's kind of like your first impression coming into an interview. It's your first impression of the organization. But what are some of the things that you do to ensure that that process goes well?
I agree with you totally. That has evolved for us from the time I first came into this organization to where we are today. I have a trainer working for me who continues to refine that process. When they walk, well, before they walk through the door, after they're made an offer, they accept the offer, our trainer reaches out to them to welcome them, talk to them about the first day, what we're going to be doing. We send them a schedule of what's going to happen. The first day or the first couple days, depending on when we can fit it in, they'll go out to lunch with their manager, even though they're still in the training mode. We provide them a detailed history of our organization in that first day, a couple days, all about our branches, sort of the background of Maine Savings and where we are today, and then start getting into the technical piece of it. We take them around the building to meet everybody. So we try to make them feel as quickly as possible part of the organization before we just jump into, you know, how do you operate our core processing system and make teletransactions or whatever the type of functional area they're working in. We give them the background. And, you know, that's something that was important to me early on, that it took a while for us to get to, but I think we're there now, and we need to just keep refining that. And then after the 3 weeks of onboarding, one of the things we've started to do now is to have them work in an organization out into the field, one of the branches, but not the branch that they're going to. So we've identified one that we send them to, and they learn, you know, it's not a sterile environment like a training environment. So they're out there doing real transactions, working live operations, and then they go to their branch of assignment.
We're talking with Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior VP of HR for Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB at 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we've been talking with Robert Carmichael, Jr. He's the Senior VP of HR for Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. Rob, we've had a great conversation so far in regards to employee engagement and talking a little bit about getting talent from employees, and because they know, obviously, they're engaged, they want to be here, they're excited about it. One of the things we're hearing, as you and I spoke about, the big challenges with employers today are finding great talent, maintaining great talent, and then employee regulation or just overall compliance in terms of regulations. The employment law changes are always happening. I like to say that there's never a time that it rests. But certainly 2016 going into 2017, there's a lot of big things happening, having to do with a lot with minimum wage, having to do with the new exempt, non-exempt regulations that are coming out. Having to do with requirements over the last few years, having to do with affirmative action, which obviously bankings as a federal contractor you're have to be compliant with. How do you see the employment law changes and challenges affecting hiring, affecting employment, affecting organizations in terms of really retaining and hiring great talent?
Well, I can see in some organizations where particularly the exempt, non-exempt overtime rules are going to have a significant impact in their organization. Ours, it isn't going to be a big impact at this point in time. We're not really affected with a lot of people, or even, you know, less than a handful that are affected. But other organizations that maybe have a lot of people that are under that threshold are certainly going to have to make some decisions about the exempt, non-exempt status, so that affects them significantly. I think the biggest effect on our people is the knowledge base and the extra training needed for compliance that in each of the positions, particularly in the lending positions. The rules in lending are continuing to evolve. Much more regulation since the compliance changes over the last 9 years since the recession. Our people have to know a lot more. Our trainers have to train a lot more, and it's created the need for a position in our organization on the senior management team. We have a vice president of risk management now, which is a brand new position. We're fortunate that we have a lady who just loves that topic and is extremely good at it. But I can see in some organizations that may not have the benefit of that, finding somebody to do that job and then finding somebody to stay on top of it is a significant impact. our people are in many more meetings because of you know, the laws and regulations that we're dealing with now. That's probably the biggest.
And that costs money, right? That costs money and time. You talk about more meetings. That's a cost right directly to the bottom line. That's not somebody out selling. They're not somebody out, contributing. That's a direct cost to the bottom line of an organization.
Well, the Credit Union National Association, which is the national lobby association for credit unions, put together a fact sheet. And I don't have my hands on it right now, but they quantified, they had a company do extensive research and quantified to provide to Congress the cost of the new regulations. And, you know, I can't say that all of them are benefiting consumers, you know, as the purpose was intended, but they're costing a significant amount of money. And we're not providing better service to our members, you know, as a result of it either. But it does require an employee to take on much more responsibility than maybe they did in the past.
The other area we see a lot that is changing and really, making the workplace different and workforce different is technology. In today's day and age, and obviously cell phones and those things are the basics, but just in the workplace themselves, the skill set needed for multitasking, the ability to use computers, the ability to use technology upgrades and systems and platforms has never been higher. And that can be a challenge for some of the employees that are in the workforce today. How are you seeing that having an impact on the organization or organizations that you work with?
The IT world is my biggest challenge, identifying and finding right now the position that we need to deal with all of the IT challenges that we have, from big data to software and hardware issues. It's constantly changing and evolving, and we're in the process right now of doing an analysis and trying to determine the type of skill set that we need, and I can see that as an issue in every organization. Some of them are better staffed and equipped with larger IT departments than maybe than certainly we are, based on what I hear from friends. But it's going to be a continual challenge. And as I said, it's identifying what type of position do you need. As you probably have reported on or talked about, big data is the buzzword now in organizations, and trying to sort out what type of information you need on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, annually, it leads to, what type of position do we need to find that data?
Well, it's not only that, but it's the cybersecurity.
Oh, absolutely.
We're now talking about a whole different level of requirements. You just talked about software and hardware. It's changing so rapidly, and the threats are changing just as rapidly. That's another big piece of this.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because when we talk about costs of compliance, when I think of compliance, that piece is the IT compliance piece in it, and that has been significant. We've spent thousands of dollars over the last few years with more audits, more IT related coverage and analysis on our systems and our security, everything from our phone systems to our core system to all of the servers that we have. So it's a significant expense and growing larger every day.
There's no question. And so the need for employees that understand this, the need for employees that, as you said, you're constantly changing. It's interesting. I was talking to an organization that does IT, and they said by the time the job description is written, it's old.
Mm-hmm.
Because, new language, new technologies have already come into play. So it's hard to think ahead to what could possibly be next. So adaptability and fluidity and intelligence really have become almost buzzwords for what you need to combat that, so that somebody can combat it with it and stay modernized with this threat.
That's absolutely correct. And, we try to, we're in the middle of trying to balance how much do we rely on an external vendor that we have for managing our servers and some of that information, how much do we keep in-house, and again, what type of skill set do we need in-house. It would be nice if we could afford to have four or five different skill sets in an IT department, but we're not large enough, so we have to make sure we make the right call and hire the right person to balance out.
One of the other areas that really employees are talking about today is the financial and physical wellness of employees. Wellness has been a buzzword for a number of years now, and it certainly have morphed and changed over the years as to what it means. And it used to be more just about, you know, having designated smoking areas or having areas in terms of which, you know, people could gather, a little bit more about healthy eating. But today it's now full-fledged programs having to do with wellness and being physical. What are some of the things that you're seeing as changes in the organization, in a macro level or in the organization you're at yourself?
The financial wellness is one of the things that we're looking at this year is really pushing education on saving for retirement. I had the opportunity to be on a panel with Senator Collins' Committee on Aging with three of the top financial people, Gene Chatsky was one of them, and talking about how unprepared Americans are for retirement. And I came at it from the perspective of a company and what we're doing and what we want to continue to do with our 401k and those sorts of things. And one of the statistics came out, 40% of Americans say their job is very or extremely stressful. And the last thing we want them to have and add to that stress is financial difficulties, which we know all people have. So we're looking at ways we can improve the education of our employees, create incentives for them to save more early on in their 401k, and just educate them about how much they're going to need at retirement from a financial wellness piece. That's that part of it. From a physical and mental wellness, we have a wellness committee that we continually try to keep energized, and we do things promoting charity walks, local runs, and get involved that way. We have a fitness center in our organization. We allocate funds for people that are not right in the headquarters area to go to a fitness center to use it towards some sort of wellness program. All those sorts of things, as well as education, we do our best to try to educate our employees that way. And one of the next steps is looking at the ergonomic piece of wellness. We're looking at sit-stand stations, which become a very important part of a wellness program because it's certainly not healthy to be sitting all day long.
No, it's really changed with the sitting's the new smoking, right? Really making
mm-hmm.
sure that
right.
you have a balance between exercise and being active in the workplace. You know, one of the things that I'll mention in terms of wellness is that there are still individuals who may resist that type of, in their mind, intrusion in the workplace. Have you seen this still? We're hearing it in some aspects. Hey, look, that's how I should take care of myself. Let me do that. Have you heard any of that recently?
Not a lot, and we haven't forced any issues that way. What we've tried to do is offer opportunities for people to participate in any way possible. Make it fun. Make it part of our charitable causes. If there's a fun run or a walk for some charity. And advertise as much as possible. You know, we've tried to make it optional. We did some testing that was optional for people who have a blood pressure and so forth tested. We've done office massages to encourage people to understand how they can benefit themselves with some healthy living activities. So we just make it available, but without being too pushy.
We're talking with Rob Carmichael. He's Senior VP of HR for Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we've had a great discussion with Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior VP of HR from Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. And we've been talking about employee engagement. We've been talking about how to deal with retention strategies. We've been talking about how to deal with recruiting and different suggestions out there. Rob, you have such an impressive background as a general. You have come out of the military and you've come into the private sector. When you made that transition, as we wrap up here in the last few minutes of the show, when you made that transition, what were some of the challenges you faced in regards to saying, hey, I have to take this to the private sector, and some of the leadership things that maybe you thought would work but maybe didn't, or back and forth, that type of conversation that people can learn from?
Well, as I had said earlier, I don't know if it's a stereotype that people have of the military, particularly if they've never been in it, but I had a lot of people just suggest to me that I didn't appear like a military person, whatever that meant. And I think part of that goes back to one of the things I learned early in the military is that it doesn't matter what job you're doing or who you're dealing with, but if you are honest with the people that you work with, work for, and those that work for you, then you're going to be successful, and you're going to keep the drama down, if you will, in the organizational climate. And I think I've always I've used that in the military, and I'm honest with the employees that I come in contact with. We talk about honesty as one of our values here, and honesty just doesn't mean you don't, you know, lie, cheat, or steal. It's you're honest about performance, you're honest about how things are going on a daily basis. So that's the first one. The other one that I learned early on in the military was sort of follow the golden rule, that you treat people the way you want to be treated. Certainly, there are times in the military, because of a timeliness standpoint, that you have to make quick, fast decisions, and you can't involve everybody. But that's not the norm. And I try to involve people in decision making, gather input, and that's really helped me a lot. The last one, if I've got a second, is looking at things from a process and a systems perspective. One of the things I learned in some of my quality management training in the military and organizational development is that if you can solve problems and improve the organization by looking at things from a process standpoint and try to improve processes and identify process owners. So I brought that into the organization as well.
You know, it's interesting that sometimes some of the simple things organizations forget because they just do things day in and day out and they don't necessarily take the time to go back and redo, right, and relook at some of the processes in place. And sometimes you can make minor tweaks that have major impact.
One of the things that people forget is that even though you've got a job organizational chart that's vertical, the processes occur horizontally, and a lot of people touch a process. So it gets lost as the environment, as you mentioned, things change, the environments change, regulations change. you need to continue to look at processes in order to keep improving the organization.
So, you know, process improvement isn't always just flowcharts and diagrams. It's also about keeping different financial considerations and in looking at an employee engagement perspective. When you're talking about bringing out a process, how deeply involved do you at a senior level get, or how much do you bring in committees on this? How do you bring in that type of focus?
Well, another thing I brought from the military, and again, it goes back to total quality management training that that I had done, is some of the senior management team, if we identify an area that we need an improvement team established, we will be the process owner, the PAT team, as we call it, sponsor. So we'll set the goals, the objective, the criteria, the boundaries of the team, identify the right people to be on the team, and then those whoever's on the team and the team leader would report back and forth to the senior management sponsor. And so that's how in many cases, things bubble up from below and we put teams together. In other cases, it's something we identify and we think there's a need for a cross-functional group of people. And we have a great middle management team that represent all the core functions that help us with that.
We've been talking with Rob Carmichael. He's a Senior VP of HR from Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. Rob, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You've provided great insight, and I think that the audience and listeners will be quite interested in knowing more about this and going to hrpowerhour.com after the show. They can look you up, they can connect with you, and they can certainly listen to the show again, which I'm sure they'll want to. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks. It's been my pleasure.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB at 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Tawny Alvarez. Was yesterday a gorgeous summer day? Did you have an employee out on intermittent FMLA leave who regularly seems to need intermittent leave on the most gorgeous of summer days? Is the FMLA turning into the Friday-Monday Leave Act? If so, you're not alone. But what, if anything, can you do to combat what you perceive to be potential abuse of FMLA intermittent leave? If the employee's leave appears to be following a schedule that is divergent to the documentation that you originally received, consider reaching out to the employee's healthcare provider and asking the doctor to recertify the leave. For intermittent leave of an unknown duration, employers can request recertification every 6 months or more often if, for example, the circumstances described in the previous certification have changed significantly, or the employer received information that caused it to doubt the employee's stated reason for the absence or the continuing validity of the existing medical certification. Contact a member of Veral Dana's labor and employment team at veraldana.com to discuss more.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by veraldana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is going to be Derek Volk, president and co-owner of Volk Packaging Corporation, a third-generation family business. He is also the author of the book Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. We're going to be talking about disabilities in the workplace. We're going to be talking about autism. And, of course, we're going to be talking about his great new book, Chasing the Rabbit. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.